Welcome to Cabronas y Chingonas, a podcast where we talk about queer and Latinx topics such as
Sela and Paloma on Sela and the Spades. Honestly, they had a certain chemistry. They had that star-crossed lover feel, and I thought that there should be more follow through. Honestly, like, I've seen straight girls do more than them too. Like, what the hell, man? Like, I love them though. I love those characters. They belong together. They should have been something more. That's all I gotta say. What up, Cabrona?
What's poppin', chingona? Was good.
Not a whole lot, as we were discussing just a second ago.
We're stressed.
Yeah. What have you been watching? I'm curious.
Okay, so I know this isn't necessarily a safe space for my taste outside of like queer and Latinx representation, but judge me all you want. I've been watching Propaganda, so I've been watching Ozark.
Oh gosh.
But it's actually really interesting. Only when you have you ever seen Random Acts of Flyness on HBO?
No, I have not.
It's awesome. Black male gaze, amazing. They do an episode where they talk about the white devil, the white demon, and it's basically, you know, Breaking Bad, Ozark. It's these shows about these middle-aged white men, and they're having their midlife crisis and living out these fantasies that they're never going to live in real life. So I like to watch it and get all the propaganda, and I also like to see white-on-white violence. You know, it's a happy little, you know, outside thing that isn't, like, really being shown. But I love to watch white-on-white violence and propaganda just because I'm studying it. I feel like I learn something new about the white male psyche every time I watch it, so.
Well, that's fun.
What about you?
Dude, you know I usually watch, like, 100 bajillion series a week. But April's been a wild month. The first half of April, all I did was watch Animal Lover movies. And I hope you guys enjoyed that episode. If you haven't listened to that episode with Baberito or yes. Latinos for Lunch, go fucking listen to it. We worked so hard on that
shit. Go listen to it.
Oh my god.
That's a lot of movies.
Yeah. And then the 2 weeks after that, the last 2 weeks, I've been writing a movie and I finished it. So,
shit. Yes.
There's been like practically no television watching on my part until yesterday when I had a mental breakdown. Fun times. And I watched the entirety of the new Netflix series, Never Have I Ever.
Oh my god. And okay, tell me what you think. I want to know, should I watch it? Should I not?
I enjoyed watching it. There are a number of problematic things in it. Fat phobia being a minor one.
Wait, yeah. What? It's only minor? That's kind of a big leap there.
A little bit, yeah. They had a character whose like sole purpose was like to be fat and to make fun of him, and I was really disappointed in that.
Oh,
I was like, why? Like,
no, that's a major
issue.
Like,
you could cut that. You could cut him completely out of this film, this series, and there would be no difference, no harm done. It's completely harmful representation in that. I'll probably post about it at some point. But obviously, everyone, you know, we ask for this all the time. Three women of color, best friends, one of them queer, one of them Afro-Latina, like, I'm not complaining, right? Like, that's some great progress at the same time. It's one of those things that Netflix does. Like, it'll do something really amazing and something really shitty in the same breath.
Oh,
but
it's a Netflix backhanded compliment, right? Like, here, this is what you want, but shut up. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I have heard, I've seen a few complaints already, but in general, yeah, it's enjoyable. It's a funny show, and it's cute in its own way, but it's also kind of basic in a lot of ways and problematic in a few ways. So yeah, that's my hot take.
No, dude, like, I haven't gone back to watching Living Single because I think like season 3 or maybe like throughout all the seasons there's a shit ton of fat phobia, and I mean, it's not like the joke is to make fun of the fat person. I can't get with that, even if it was like, you know, the 90s. It's, you know, quote unquote, still the 90s, but it's there's so many shows, there's so many things where it's not even subtle. Yeah. And it's just like tacky.
It's not even at you're the level like, of like, you know, when like gay people like they act flamboyant and then that's the butt of the joke or whatever, but it's not necessarily like all the way and expense, like, because most of the time they'll make that joke about themselves or whatever the fuck it is, but some of these jokes like in this show were deliberately like just fucked up, just making fun of fatness, and that's the whole point. Like, it was so trash, like, especially with Mindy Kaling, you know, being the head of the show, like, you just think that shit wouldn't slip through the cracks, but fuck.
I mean, think about it. She used to write for The Office, and there's still a lot of things that there, right? Like, The Office was not woke. Like, they did a lot of fucked up trash.
Woke or whatever the fuck, yeah.
Yeah, right? Like, you know, but it's they couldn't get away with that shit now. I mean, I know the little kids like it, but, I mean, we're all grown. We're past that shit, so.
It was just, no. It was just weird.
I mean,
it was just
fucked. I'll watch it, but that's weird to still be doing that now in 2020. I think it's fucking
strange.
Yeah,
I think we should watch it, but I also think some call out posts aren't in order. You know,
down, super down. What other, I mean, other than propaganda that I've been watching a lot of King of the Hill, because I just need some like, dude, we're living in a very unfunny episode of King of the Hill. That's all Texas is an unfunny episode of King of the Hill. I mean it's fucked up what we're living right now.
Yeah, so I don't leave this room in Texas anymore, like, not even the house I used to leave sometimes, like, just to go outside. I don't even leave my broom anymore, like, it's ridiculous.
Oh no, dude, you gotta go outside, like, in the yard. You have yard space.
Yeah, but I don't know, I should
go. you have to, dude, because like the days that I haven't just like seen the sun, I get headaches, and then I don't want to like leave my like tiny ass jail cell apartment, like.
It's not that, I mean, sorry, but I live in Los Angeles. It's not that small. It's a nice apartment.
It's big, and it's big, but it's still small.
For Texas, but yeah, I guess not it's New York, small, but
it's not a New York apartment,
no,
right?
In like, New York, my bedroom is the apartment, like, no.
Yeah, your whole bedroom is the whole entire space. So, yeah, we're grateful. To all of y'all still out there, like, listening, we're super grateful for y'all.
Yeah, you don't
let
have
us know how you're doing,
most likely, and you're still listening, you're wild, and thank you.
Yeah, you guys are the best if you're still listening. And love to y'all, because it's hard for us, it's hard for anybody, right? Like, whether you're employed or not employed, it's rough out here right now, because people you love are probably still going out there every single day because they have to, and there's just nothing you can do to stop that. And it's just it's been stressful, guys, so we're sending you a virtual hug wherever you are. We love you, and we hope you stay safe, please.
Yeah, we're probably gonna go a little lighter on the episodes this coming month. Next week is our Patreon episode, and so we'll release there for sure, and then we'll probably do an episode, regular episode after that. But then I think we're gonna take a week off, which is gonna translate for you guys 3 weeks off. And then we'll be back in June. So we'll see you in June. But like I said, we still have another episode that we're going to come out with. You guys should all watch the movie, The Half of It, this Friday on Netflix.
Yes, you guys. So if you don't know, now you know. It's the same director from Saving Face, which we talked about. One of the best, if not the best, lesbian rom-com movies.
Woo.
Alice Wu, our fucking queen. She made one of the best lesbian movies, rom-coms, of all time. 5 banduzas, 6 banduzas. She's a queen. So I trust her. I don't know where she's going with this. Maybe I do, right? But here's another story by a lesbian woman. You know, shout out to Alice Wu. So we love you.
Yeah, I think it'll be great. So yeah, just check that out, because we're definitely going to cover it. I think we've already decided that before even watching the movie.
Oh, yeah.
So look forward to that. And I guess let's get started. But before that, let's talk about how you can support us, because this episode is sponsored by CYC, Cabrón de Chingones, Teespring. We have merch. We're both wearing our merch right now. I have the new TV edition merch right now.
Ooh, baller.
And there's also our Concha shirts, there's our Cafecito shirts, all of that.
We have pillows.
Yeah, we have pillows and phone cases now. That's fun. And a bunch of new colors, too. You can get, like, some hot pink sweaters and stuff.
So, oh, I saw that. That's really fly.
Yeah. Check it out. You know, the summer's coming up. We've got tank tops, too. That's what I'm wearing right now.
Yes, yeah, support two broke bitches still making shit right now in quarantine times. It's it helps pay for things that we need. So, please.
Yeah, and honestly, as importantly as, like, merch is, like, literally probably as important, if not more important, is to leave a rating and a review of 5 stars on iTunes. It's free, and, like, that's, it's super helpful for other people to find the podcast, other than your friends and family, which I hope you already told about this podcast, so, yeah.
Yes, yeah, the more reviews, the more 5-star reviews you put, the more we get legit, you know, the more other people start to look at us. We appreciate y'all, and we would appreciate if you told, like, 5 friends. Anyways, like, I'm a pyramid scheme.
Start a chain email. Send to 5 friends for good representation look in the media.
Yes.
But all that is in our description on this episode, and it's on our link is in our bios on at CYC Podcast on Twitter and on Instagram, and it's on our website. It's anywhere that you find us.
Yes. Anyways, what will we be talking about today?
We're talking about some Amazon Prime content today. I don't know which one came out first.
Hunters came out first.
Okay, so Hunters is what I'm talking about. It's a series. And then after that, Cynthia is going to school us on this new film that is a very refreshing film called Cella and the Spades.
Love it. It's, you know, chef's kiss. So,
yeah,
it's quality. We'll get into it. We'll deep dive that shit because I'm obsessed. I really, really, really loved it. But anyways, would you like to do the honors of going first, ma'am?
Yee. So Hunters is an Amazon Prime original. It premiered in early 2020. It's completely out. Yeah, the whole first season is out. It hasn't been renewed for a second season. I'll get into why I think that is. So this was created by David Whale. His maternal grandparents were Holocaust survivors. And as a young kid, a way that they were kind of able to talk to him about those difficult topics were through these, like, superhero stories that they kind of softened the horrific details of that time for them, or mostly just for his grandmother, because his grandfather died before he was born. So he kind of took that and he translated it into this show. In certain parts, it was literally translated some of those moments between him and his grandmother, where she's telling stories about her past, but she's just like, but she's framing it in this, like, superhero story. And he then also expanded into, like, a greater conversation about vigilantism, which I'll get into as well. So Jordan Peele's involvement in this as executive producer, the only reason that I even knew that existed, the only reason that it was on my radar, and yeah. his influence is all over the thing too. Like, the creator David, he stated in an interview that the reason that Jordan Peele got involved was the obvious one, right? Like, he's interested in stories about marginalized communities and stuff like that, and in this case it was the Jewish community, so he was like on board, done. And apparently he was really, like, a lot more involved than I thought. And when I watched the show, I was like, yeah, like, you know, if it hadn't been Jordan Peele, like, this would be so much wider. I can just feel it. I know it.
Thank God.
Yeah. The lead, actually, of this show looks so much like the creator. I was like, oh, this dude is, he made this show about himself. So, getting into a little bit about what the show is about, it's based in the 70s, but it's a very modern show. It reminded me a lot of, like, Watchmen, because there's like this dystopian-esque, like, content in it that it's based on real historical facts, right? Like, in Watchmen, they take the event of the Oklahoma riots and build on them, and they create their own fictional stories with them the actual existing historical facts as the foundation, but it's still very fictional. at the same time, they call out like modern day racism and concerns about politics, right? So Hunters does the same thing in a way. The Holocaust is the foundation, and the characters, both in the past and in the present, because they go back and forth, they're all fictional. And there's no supernatural or fantastical elements in the show, but some of the storylines are like so bizarre and have that superhero vibe that it might as well be, you know, it's like, might as well be Smallville. I don't know.
I love Smallville.
That's my go-to. So they, what really struck me, they have a really stylistic approach kind of scattered throughout the series. They every now and then they'll have like these brief historical fact, like infomercials to talk about real life events.
Oh, cool.
Like completely outside of the story, right? Like they just kind of throw it in there and they're like, fun fact. And like one of the things that they talk about was Operation Paperclip, and it becomes a big part of the series and embeds itself in the storyline, because, and that's a real operation. It was a real program sanctioned by the government in the 40s and 50s. And what they basically did was the U.S. government brought actual Nazis, like high-ranking Nazis, to the U.S. to work as scientists, as engineers, technicians, and more, you know, like, and so one of the skits that's kind of in the show that they, that's, like I said, it's completely outside of everything, it's just like a little historical briefing that they give the audience, is a bunch of government officials discussing whether or not to go through with this operation. And one of the excuses that one of the people use in that is like, well, if we don't get the Nazis to work for us, then our enemies will. And like they have all this this type of shit. Yeah, like they base this stuff on real facts. And in other little segments, they have like that little vignettes, they have like a game show where a bunch of people will say a bunch of anti-Semitic shit. And then, like, at the end of it, they pose the question to the audience, like, have you ever had these thoughts? Has your family member, have your family members said this stuff? Like, you know, like, it points the finger back at you. So those moments I thought were really interesting. And the way that they did it was really interesting because this show is set in the 70s, but it's shot in a very 2020 type of way. Mm. But those segments are what, like, redone to look very 70s again. Ooh, okay. If that makes sense. I don't know. No, it's interesting. It's really interesting. And there's not like a consistency to it either. Like they'll throw it in where it needs to be thrown in.
Oh, kind of like a little FYI, get to know this really quick.
Yeah,
that's cool.
But they'll do it like in a weird, entertaining way, and it's always outside of the actual show. Like, it's weird.
That's awesome. I love that.
But back to what the show is kind of about in a more general sense, it's the main character is a young guy named Jonah. He's played by Logan Lerman, who is the Perks of Being a Wallflower kid. He teams up with a group of Nazi hunters in New York after tragedy strikes his family. I won't be specific. The leader of the hunters is Meyer Offerman. He's a millionaire Jewish guy who was a Holocaust survivor, and he's played by Al Pacino, of all people.
They got Al Pacino? They got, okay.
Look. Yeah.
Talent.
Which I thought was a weird choice at first, but it ended up working out really well. Other characters and that are part of this Nazi hunting group. Saul Rubinek, in real life, the actor, his parents were Holocaust survivors too, so having him in that was really interesting. He's him and Carol Kane from Kimmy Schmidt. She's like that the owner of that apartment or whatever. They are a couple in this. They play Mindy and Marie Markowitz. Both of them in the series are Holocaust survivors in the show, and they're really essential parts of the Nazi hunting team.
I was like, yo, what?
And it's a serious role for Carol Kane from Kimmy Schmidt. So it was really interesting to see her like not be like a ridiculous blonde woman. Next is Josh Radner from How I Met Your Mother. He's Lonnie Flash in this, who's like he's a struggling actor and a really awkward part of the show. Probably my least favorite. Mm-hmm. It didn't fit in. It felt fake to me. But he's just like a sad and emotionally damaged master of disguise. Yeah.
Okay.
Next, the next character in the team is Tiffany Boone. She's Roxy Jones. She is the driver and a fighter for the cause.
Right on.
She, what's funny or awesome to me, I guess, is that she's the only one in the group that gets paid. Like, she has a salary for what she does. Because, one, she knows her worth and isn't about to work for free.
That's right.
And, I don't know, I love her character. She literally has lines in certain scenes where she'll talk to her young daughter. And it's always, like, really cool shit. She'll be like, I'm a black woman in America, baby. Like, superheroes ain't got nothing on me.
Hey, what's up? That's true.
Stuff like that.
Fucking facts.
Love yeah, it. It's dope. They don't, like, try to whitewash her at all. Or, I don't know. They give her a storyline, which I appreciated. They give her a common sense, too, which a lot of these characters don't have.
Damn.
The next one is Louis Ozawa. He plays Joe Mizushima, a Vietnam War veteran. And then the last person is Kate Mulvaney, who plays Sister Harriet, who's a former MI6 operative. And she dresses as a nun, which is really fun. Yeah, so there's a lot of people kind of working against them. Mainly, it's literally the Fourth Reich, led by somebody named the Colonel. And the Colonel is Lena Olin. So it's like this blonde white woman who's a little older, mm-hmm. who is the leader of the Nazi party. And she's not the top leader, we find out later, but mm-hmm. she's the most visible one. Like, people respond to her. And she's operationally, she's the leader of this whole thing, of this like super Nazi comeback.
I mean, it's back.
it's wild. Oh, and they... Oh, God, it's such a weird show. I want to get into details, but let me not, because I have so much more to cover.
okay.
So, on the side, we have one of my favorite characters, Millie Morris. She's played by Jerrica Hinton. She was on Grey's Anatomy for a while. That's probably where you guys know her from. She's an FBI agent who kind of stumbles into the whole thing by accident. She's very competent as a detective, so she immediately starts linking all this shit that even the individual groups have not linked together yet. And she, for the reason that I love her, is because she goes home to her gorgeous girlfriend, Maria. And
What's up? Okay. Yeah,
she has a whole storyline of her own with her parents and dealing with her feelings about her sexuality, because it's the 70s. And it's two black women, one of them also a Latina, in a loving relationship.
Like, what?
I was here for it.
We're getting fed. This is real.
Yeah. Yeah, and I expected the worst with a show like this, but no, they did pretty solid. So, another thing that I should mention is that, and I kind of did already, there's an ongoing storyline, or several of them, during the Holocaust. And most of the series focuses on the present in the 70s, but it does go back in time a lot. And it kind of tells the story of a lot of the current and one of the former members of the Hunters when they were still in concentration camps and stuff like that. So it'll tell the stories about the people that they lost, how they survived, and like okay. kind of the abominable things that the Nazis that they're hunting, what Same. They did. So it'll go into all of that. With those past scenes, it kind of takes some time to link together the past and the future, because they're so separate at first, but then you realize like when you get there towards the end, you're absolutely mind blown, because it's not just like, oh, here's the history, like it's literally like these people lived it and this shit mm-hmm. happened, and like people are like, you know, people aren't who they say they are, people that are alive aren't people that are dead are alive, shit like that. When I was watching this, I had kind of a curiosity, because I, myself, am not well-versed in, like, Jewish culture. I'm not probably fit to comment on what was right or wrong in that respect.
Heavy.
But I had my suspicions throughout the whole thing that there was going to be something controversial, because all of it was a lot. A lot of it was intense, you know, like, from the very first scene, it's just bloody murder. So I was wondering, like, something's not gonna sit right with people, and I was right.
Okay. All right, this is what I want to know. All right, hot takes.
So the Auschwitz Memorial Museum had an issue with one specific scene, and it's one of those scenes that's set in the past where Nazis are playing a human game of chess at Auschwitz.
Wait, hold up. Human game?
Yeah, like instead of pieces, they're people and they move them forward. And if somebody gets knocked out, they shoot them.
What the fuck?
Yeah, it's fucked, right? It's sadistic. It's honestly like worst shit was done in these camps. So like their problem was more about like the fact that this right here, this particular scene was completely inaccurate, but it was completely fictional, but it was set in a real place. Whereas, you know, other parts of it, like, they were fictional and fictional through and through with only that basis of the Holocaust. So they, yeah, they felt like this was dangerous, quite honestly, because we kind of live in a world where there's so much anti-Semitism still present, and there's a lot of Holocaust deniers, this is only going to aid in that shit, right? Like, presenting that game, according to the Auschwitz Memorial Museum, was very harmful, very dangerous. And when I read about this, I thought to myself, because I had read some or heard some interviews, I was like, it does seem like a really careless thing for them to do, because they were so careful in other aspects. Mm-hmm. The creator talked about how on, you know, the tattoos that they would put of the numbers on their wrists, they would only do numbers above 2,200 and 2,499, only above that number, because that was the highest recorded number tattooed on a Holocaust survivor or victim. And he was like, I'm not going to misrepresent those people's stories, you know, like, he wants to be respectful in that aspect, and et cetera, et cetera. That's such a careful detail to consider. But then he, you know, didn't have that same consideration on the other scene.
For all that violence.
And he did, comment back on that, and I'll link that story on our website on our show notes. He, you know, he had some thoughts, but it kind of was something that I thought about when I found out who the creator was and his history with this whole thing, because you and I and some other people have talked about how it is when, like, the children of the people who experience certain things, like us being children of immigrants, talking about those stories is not the same as immigrants talking about those stories.
Yeah.
And we don't that applies right. In this case too.
Yeah.
Or it's not that we don't have that right, it's just that, like, we're not them. We're not gonna tell it the same way. We're not gonna, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It's just, if David Will wasn't, like, two generations after this, he probably would have told the story differently.
Exactly. He would have had, like, that firsthand knowledge, which you can't necessarily get. You know, like, we're never gonna know what it's like to cross the border, so why would we tell that story if we can't be completely honest to that situation?
Or I don't know that we can't tell the story. I just think that it's more like somebody else kind of takes priority in that, or like somebody else's
co-writer
a little more.
Yeah,
another, like, it's, you got to take them that into consideration. You need to be careful with it, is basically what I'm saying. And like, I think, like I said, I'm not the one to comment on this. I just thought about it in that sense of, like, he was careful in this sense.
But then,
and he had his own rebuttal, which you guys can read about, regarding that specific scene too. So it's kind of up to whoever reads it to comment on, right?
Gotcha. It's just, yeah.
But that's
hard.
It's complicated. Mm-hmm. It's, yeah. I'm gonna. But getting back to the whole show, overall, it was really well done from a creative and a production standpoint. The cliffhanger at the end, which I refuse to spoil, it's absolutely nuts. Like, I did not expect it. Like, I absolutely have no idea what they're doing for season two, but according to the creator, he has 5 seasons planned out in his head. He has a Bible for the show already set up.
Oh, that's good. And I like that.
He's a very young creator. This is literally his first major credit. And he's a showrunner. And now he has, like, 2 large productions ahead of him. Yeah. He's gotten a lot of recognition as a writer.
Oh, okay.
But not for stuff that he's actually contributed. Like nothing has gotten to be produced. He just has written stuff that is popular, but it's not
his.
Been produced.
Or like, yeah, okay. Okay.
It's not out, it's not for viewing, you know. Damn. It's just, like, talked about. Like, oh, this guy, he's really good. He's never had anything out.
You're like, same, dude, same. Running a show on Netflix and Jordan Peele's producing. Okay.
On Amazon Prime.
Prime, but go off.
It's still wild, yeah. Like, how he could... That's his first thing? Like, not even going to be in the writer's room? Got it. Cool. Great.
That's some, like, Game of Thrones... shit. That's them.
Yeah.
Anyways, they...
Yeah, that's Bran when he became the friggin' president of the world.
Right? What the fuck? Oh my god,
he's really young. But anyways, it was good. There's, if you're into really violent shows that have like a little bit of superhero drama, vigilanteism, multiple well-rounded POC characters, and a really interesting queer storyline, this could work for you. It worked for me. I honestly wasn't gonna go back to it after watching the pilot. Not because there was anything wrong with it, just because it's not my typical cup of tea. Mm. But when I found out about the queer storyline, I was like, okay.
Back on board.
Let's do this. And I'm really glad that I watched it. It's a really interesting show. You definitely have to watch it, though.
Do you think like this was the appropriate time to release that kind of show?
It's one of those things where it's like, it's hard for me to comment on, right? Like, to me, I might be wrong about this, but I put it very much in the same place as Watchmen, right? Watchmen also talked about these really sensitive current subjects using something from the past. Like, and Watchmen was really well received, right?
It was really well done and very respected, because it did a lot of things correctly.
And I think Hunters did a lot of things correctly, too. That was, of all the things in the show, that was there was one scene, right? Like, that was seen that way because it was fictional. And yeah, like I said, it's up to you guys to interpret his words and on his rebuttal on that.
Damn.
But yeah, it's... I would say, like, no cafecitos, the show will keep you awake.
Oh yeah, me and Glow have been... that's, like, next on our list. I haven't started it just because we've been binging other things. So that's literally probably what we'll start tonight. So shout out to that. But yeah.
Nice.
Okay, you said how many cafecitos?
I don't, just none.
None. Oh, shit, yeah. Like that?
I understand, like, I don't know. I would maybe feel differently if I were a Jewish person, but I'm not. So it's like, it's hard for me to be the judge on that.
Gotcha. I mean, yeah, that's true. There's always going to be that element missing from our reviews, just like that element's going to be missing from this next review for Sela and the Spades. I mean, this movie wasn't for everybody. I saw that the way it was received by critics, it's kind of like half and half, right? Like, the unseasoned don't necessarily like it. Everyone that is kind of seasoned, you know, we eat some spice, we generally like it. That's been what I've seen on Twitter, is that none of the white little queers or the stans have been even bringing this up. And that's a damn shame, honestly.
That's a... freaking not a surprise.
It's not a surprise.
Not a surprise.
Not at all. But here we are, right? This is what we do. We dig into this, right? So, Sela and the Spades came out in 2020, but it actually originally came out in Sundance last year in 2019. That's where it was, like, medium received, right? Like, for anyone like Barry Jenkins, they've hyped this. They know what this is. Ryan Johnson, right? Is that how you say?
Rian
Johnson also really fucking loved this movie, and it makes sense because the director Tyresha Poe actually was very heavily influenced by both of those people. This movie is about Sela and the Spades. It's about a boarding school in Philadelphia that has five different factions within the school that control gambling, snitching, cheating, alcohol, drugs, parties. What I really thought was interesting was the world building of this movie. You get thrown right into this, like, completely different experience, right? Like, I've never been a boarding school. I've never been a black woman, right? So these are great things. I love this. It even feels kind of like a live-action anime at first, where you're like, what the fuck am I watching? This is, like, very, like, you have to very much suspend your belief of reality. And I actually really love that, especially during right now, when you do not want to think about the real world. So this other world that she created is just, I want to stay here forever in this school in Haldwell Academy. you're gonna see some very, you're gonna see Lovie Simone. She is amazing in this. She plays the lead, she plays Sela. One of the strongest performances of the entire movie. Loved her character, made it very believable. You're also gonna see Celeste O'Connor playing Paloma, kind of like the sidekick. She's new to the school, she's being introduced to this world, and that's kind of who we're being introduced with, right? We're new to the world, so is Paloma. Then there's Jarrell Jerome. You know him, and if you don't, he won, I believe, an Emmy for When They See Us, working with the fucking fantastic Ava DuVernay. Politics are a little here and there, but it's okay. We still stand Miss Ava DuVernay, okay? Didn't mean for any of that to rhyme. That's whack. Sorry. Anyways, the school's divided into five factions, the Spades. They run the booze, pills, and the powders, and the fun of the entire school. And Sela is kind of the king, the queen. She rules this entire school. What she says goes. And what's amazing about that is that what you're getting in this entire movie is something we talk about a lot, something I'm obsessed with, is female gaze. And this gaze, G-A-Z-E. But we're also obsessed with the other one. Anyways, this entire movie, what makes it stand out to me, what makes me obsessed with this movie, is not even necessarily the story, the world building. What I'm obsessed with is that we're thrown into this world where it's black female gaze, and that's so unique, it's so different, and it's sad that we don't see it. I mean, where else? We've talked about other black female gays. You know, we've talked about Cheryl Dunye, we talked about Ava DuVernay, we've talked about Melina Matsoukas, we've talked about Miss D. Reese. You know, all of these are black female gays. And what's so important about that is that none of these girls, these teenage girls specifically, are not being sexualized. None of them. There's a very specific scene early on in the movie where Sela is kind of front and center, as she always is, which is chef's kiss, love this. She's looking directly into the camera. Also, side note, the cinematographer, Jomo Frey, oh my god, wow, like, I obsessed. Anyways, there's this very particular scene at the beginning where she's talking about what it means to be a 17-year-old girl. And she's talking about within the confines of this cheerleading group in this gym, they decide the dances, they decide how long their skirt's gonna be, they decide everything. This is the small world where they have control. And you see, you cut into all these different scenes of all types of girls, mainly not white girls. Ooh, another thing, not a lot of white girls talking in this movie, just maybe one. Great, thank you. Cuts to these other girls doing these dance routines that aren't sexualized. So rare. Black women are being centered, also super rare. And I'm obsessed because what it means to be 17 and have a body and be a girl and to be a girl of color, you know, to be a black woman specifically. It's never been this, like, shown other than maybe, like, through Beyoncé's Lemonade or Rihanna's Anti, which, I mean, Tyrese Poe drew a lot of inspiration from Rihanna's Anti. The cinematography was based on Rihanna. The scenes, the way this entire movie was shot with close-ups of Sela as much as possible, close-ups of black women. I'm obsessed with this. Like, I'm obsessed with the fact that we're seeing women take the lead. I barely heard a man talk in this movie. The only time I saw a white guy was he was getting beat up. Fantastic. Love it. That's when he spoke. Besides that, I didn't see dudes talk other than Jarrell Jerome. Shout out to the Afro-Latinos in this movie. Yeah, Gina Torres in this movie for like 3 seconds, but she was downright scary and believable as Sela's mother, and perfect, perfect. Chef's kiss to the acting in this movie. I mean, a lot of the younger kids in the movie, maybe they need a, you know, it just takes them more time. It's okay, right? I'm not necessarily focused on the performances of people outside of Sela, Maxi, and Paloma, the three leads of this movie. So them three, super strong. Another thing I found really interesting about the movie was the what Mytha probably didn't like so much, and we'll get into that in a second. I'll ask you how you feel. There's this very interesting, very not so subtle relationship between Paloma and Miss Sela. They have this kind of natural casual intensity about them every time there's a scene between them. Now, it could be read as queer bait, but it also could be read as, I don't even know. You know, I'm not. Maitha, tell me how you feel about their scenes. I need to know.
I thought they had great, like, scenes together, period, right? Like, the female gaze part that you're talking about was fantastic. Casella is looking for something really particular in Paloma, and she has this, I haven't mentioned this yet in detail, but Sela gives this kind of speech, very personal information to Paloma about how she's not really interested in doing the whole sex thing, and she's not interested in crying over boys in the bathroom.
Yes.
I love that because it was just so logical, and it felt like so, like, it made so much sense to me. I thought, I was like, this woman is smart, holy shit. Mm-hmm. Like, yes, I would never want to do that either. So she's looking at Paloma and, like, as a prodigy.
Mm-hmm.
Prodigy, yeah. Or whatever. And it's amazing and it's great. And I'm like, okay, that's great. Let's go all in. Let's keep going. But like you said, this is not like that kind of a movie. Okay, so I think you just told me this, but this is gonna be a television show.
Yes.
And I think it should have been a television show to begin with.
Correct.
Is the thing.
Correct.
I think it should have been to begin with. In that case, I would be 100% happy with this movie, or because it would be a show, right? Like, it wouldn't be done yet. And that kind of thing, I don't know, I think totally exists, and it's great, and I loved seeing it. But it was at the end, it was kind of like, I can't really talk about it without spoiling it, but let's just say, like, I wanted something more from it.
Mm-hmm.
I guess you could say, I don't know, I thought it was like almost misleading but not quite. But yeah, I do love them together though, and I think, and I see where the director is coming from when she says that this was more than it seems. But I also, like, I'm already at the point where I'm frustrated by people kind of backtracking and saying that, like, just let it be what it is. Like, you put this on screen, let it be what's on the screen, you know?
That's fair. But, like, for me, the way I saw their relationship was that it was, Sela was like this, and this is another thing about, you know, this entire movie that I'm obsessed with, is that Sela is power hungry. Sela is deeply, deeply emotionally repressed. Sela is manipulative. There's a lot of, like, we never get to see, like, a black woman be all of those things, right, without being just angry or suffering all the time. Like, Sela's not suffering. Sela's not pissed. She's, like, very calmly.
She's not raising her voice at you. She's like,
yes.
She's not raising her voice at you. She's telling you what you're gonna do, and that's it.
Exactly. And she's exerting this control and taking up this space, and it's powerful. But at the same time, she's not a perfect character, right? She is this deeply, deeply emotionally repressed character, where to the point where she's unable to, like, form friendships with people, period. I think her only friend is Maxie, who she sees as a friend, maybe. We don't know, because that's the thing. There's so many walls up with this girl. And at the end of the movie, you see kind of the wall start to crack. And that's why, I agree with you, this should have been a show. But I think, you know, people make what they are able to make, and then from there, they can take it somewhere else, right? So I think that's where she was with it. She made this based off of a short. That short extended into this movie. Now the movie is getting extended into a show. So that's where I think she was going with it, is that she wanted to stay in this world, and she wasn't done. But, to see a black woman be all of those things is very powerful. We need more of it. If anything, I think she passes, like, the Toni Morrison test, where she's like, I'm not going to give you black pain just for the sake of it. I'm going to give you black joy, and you get to have that.
She passes a lot of tests. This is great. This is so many women, so many girls, so many, like, people of color. Like, it's just, it was great. It was fantastic. There was no complicatedness. There was no, like, problems with them related to their race, right? Like, there was no, like, nothing like that. It was a world apart.
Yes.
Where, and this show 100% could have been, like, a Netflix show about a bunch of white kids. Like,
oh God.
100% never would have gotten greenlit.
Never would have watched
it. Never would have glanced at it. And but that's 100% could have happened. But instead, it's this amazing thing that is really setting, I think, going to set a precedent for so many good future content that isn't white.
Oh, yes. And that's another thing that we talked about even with Babelito. It was like, do we have to be Latinos with stereotypes? Do we have to be gays with stereotypes? What if we don't fit any of those boxes? And that's what this show does, is going like, I don't fit those boxes. I'm going to create my own box. I'm going to create my own lane. This is all the things that I know I've always been, but doesn't exist. And she made it. And that's what I've been wanting forever. And this movie is phenomenal. It's shot beautifully. I'm obsessed. Like, some of the story, again, it needs to be explained in the show. It cannot be explained in this movie. Lots of questions. I was left with more questions maybe than answers. Which I think is great if you're making a show. Like, give me 20 more of these.
Yeah.
I'm obsessed.
This is a perfect show.
Yes.
If it was a show.
Yeah, and I'm glad that she's getting one, and I'm glad that she's going to explore these relationships, whichever ones. You know, this is kind of like the way Dear White People was made. It was a movie, and then it became a show, and we got to stay in this world. And I'm trusting her more than I'm trusting that show, right? Because she's already doing things that show. Is they're different tones or different things, cannot be compared. They're not the same. So I love this show. It's five panluzes, complicated female characters, probably crazy, not to mention Sela's relationship with her mother. There was a discussion about a scorpion and a frog, and I don't know who was the scorpion, I don't know who was the frog between them. They were both so scary. There is Afro-Latino representation. I mean, Jerome was in it for a second. Gina Torres is in it for a second. So I stan, and I like that they were kind of in it, but not really. It's still about Sela. And I'm obsessed with there being a dark-skinned black woman front and center in a fucking show. More people should be talking about this. It's black female gaze, black female repression. There's just so much that we haven't seen. We haven't been blessed enough to see. But all of these black creatives and artists are making shit. And you should go fucking watch it because it's fucking beautiful. Okay? So, five panluzes. I recommend this to everyone. Yes, it's not as gay as it can be. But everything else, it was more than I ever expected to be watching. So I just, I'm sure I forgot things. I'm a fan. So there's this whole nod to like classic Hollywood where they go to like this dance party and this music is playing and Sela and Paloma are again having another moment. And I just, I'm sick of myself talking. Just go watch this.
It's really, really good, guys. Definitely check it out. It was a great getaway. The shots are really interesting. Probably not like my particular taste.
Not like, not every shot.
In production. It has like this thing that it does where it zooms. It keeps a still shot and it just zooms, which is really interesting. I thought it was almost like a nod to like blaxploitation films back in the day, but they would usually zoom and then change the focus so it seemed like the person was staying still but the background was moving forward. But this one didn't do that. It was just kind of zoomed. It was interesting. I didn't dislike it. It's just like, you know, not my thing, but yeah, it did some interesting stylistic things in the cinematography.
It did. So shout out to Jomo Frey. Barry Jenkins recommended this. Come on, y'all. Get on this train. It's zooming, okay? You know, black female gaze is so rare. Like, you know, when do we get black female filmmakers? And then they get this kind of, I don't know how much creative control she had, but it seems like she had a lot, because a lot of it was just, I can't. Y'all go watch this. There's some complications with the story that could have been done different, or I don't know. I'm not in charge of this shit, right? But just go watch this. I have to stop talking. I have nothing else to say. Cindy, shut up. But anyways,
so to recap, both of these shows are way more like, have a lot more black characters than they would have had, let's say, even 5 years ago.
Oh, for sure.
So honestly, looking at both of these pieces is like looking at the future. So that's the big comparison between them two, other than Amazon Prime.
Yeah,
so check both of them out. Both of them have Afro-Latinos, black people, queer relationships, one kind of, one a lot. And so, yeah, I know you guys got time, so go check it out.
Yeah, you guys got nothing but time. And, yeah, there's a playlist of the music. They have SZA on it, so look, look, winning, staying winning. But anyways, let's wrap this up.
Yeah. So thank you for listening. You know, during quarantine when you don't have a freaking commute. Like I said, we'll be back next week on Patreon, and then that episode will release on our regular feed the week after that. Please watch the half of it tomorrow if you're listening to it on the day of, or today if you're listening to it on Friday, May 1st. Watch that movie. I know that you're gonna like it. I don't know that you're gonna like it, but I think you'll like it. And
if you listen to us, you'll probably like it. Alice Wu is a master.
Yeah, just do it so you can prepare for our next episode is what I'm saying. I hope that you guys are staying safe, and feel free to reach out at CYC Podcast on Twitter or Instagram. You can email us at cycpodcastmail@gmail.com. My personal at on Twitter and Instagram is mytepanda, mytepanda.
And I'm at friedbutbita on Twitter. DM us, let us know what you're watching, let us know what you're not watching. And we're always down nigger drunk with y'all on Instagram. So just let us know.
Yeah. Maybe, I don't know, if we're feeling up for in a couple weeks, we can do a live stream or something, but no promises.
Yeah. Let's work on our mental health. We got a lot to, oh God. Yeah, we need to work on it, y'all. So this is for us. We need time to get our heads straight, because it's been stressful. So
yeah, so one last thought, go leave us a rating and review, as I already said. Okay, bye guys.
Bye.